Welcome, everybody, to the next edition of the Board Game Barbecue. I am your host tonight, Mitch, and I am here with two lovely gentlemen from the northern regions of our country. I have Adrian. How are you doing, Adrian?
I'm doing good, mate. How are you doing?
Not too bad. And we also have Def, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Nice and chilly up here in the north.
A bit colder than you anticipated when you moved up to Brisbane.
This
right?
is not what I was promised. Send me back.
You say the north, isn't it about just past halfway, technically? Like,
well, it depends. When you, if you count population, it's north.
Okay. No, I'm just counting like the top to the bottom in distance.
Yeah, so a bit chilly up there in Brisbane as well. I thought it was just Brisbane was supposed to be beautiful one day.
Yeah.
Remarkably cold the next. Is that how it works?
Pretty much. Like, it's just sort of, as soon as that sun goes, that's it. It just drops. The temperature just starts to rapidly drop, and you really feel it for sure. So, as soon as the sun comes out, you're fine.
I'm sure if you spoke to Thomas in Germany, you probably would disagree that it was that cold at all.
That's true.
What's your height top today? Is it about, 17?
I think so, yeah, like 18 or something. 18 yeah, degrees. Right. 20 degrees. Good. Yeah, it's not too bad. But yeah. You're wearing an hoodie, so it must be cold down there.
It's the only thing I can fit into these days.
An hoodie or a bin bag.
Yeah, exactly. Or a parachute.
Parachute.
Oh, dear. So what have we been up to? Anything interesting? It's been a while since I've been on with you two.
Yeah. I just got back from the cinema. I just went and saw Top Gun Maverick.
Ah, right.
And I have to say, I won't do any spoilers in that, obviously, but I am so glad that I didn't watch Top Gun the night before.
Yeah, right. Why is that?
Why is that?
Because it was just like watching Top Gun anyway. It was just Top Gun. It instantly just felt like I was watching Top Gun within the first 30 seconds. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah. I saw it about a week ago. I think pretty much almost the entirety of the population of the earth have seen it now, right? Because
it's real popular. I think it's
killed it the first couple of weeks at the box office. Mm. But yeah, I saw it, and I watched the original Top Gun just as a refresher about a week or so before I went and saw it.
Did you feel like you were almost watching it again?
No. I watched the original Top Gun and went, wow, that hasn't aged well.
Oh, dear. But then you watched the new one and went, wow, Tom Cruise has aged really well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely he has. I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of – maybe there's some sort of Scientology trick going on there. I don't know.
Possibly. But,
or I just think a lot just of super healthy and plastic surgery.
Yeah, maybe a mix of all the things.
Plenty of Botox. But in terms of the movie,
yes,
I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic.
100%.
Yeah.
You got what you paid for. You went to see Top Gun, and you got Top Gun. That was pretty much it. So that was great. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It was worth seeing for sure. So, and it was phenomenal, the footage they got with the real, like, jet fighter planes using, the American military. I heard that they were paying, like, $50,000 an hour to record the real guys flying the real planes. There wasn't any CGI in the film at all.
Yeah, and I did read really tell that Tom was like insistent that they didn't use green screens and they had to be in the planes and stuff.
Oh, you could definitely tell. Like it was really, really, really well shot and made. So
awesome. Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, get along and check it out. And have you seen the spin-off board game, Top Gun, the board game?
No.
Yeah, no, I haven't either. I don't think it exists, but we're supposed to talk about board games.
Oh, nice.
Nice. I thought that would be a nice segue into, whatever we might talk about in the gaming category.
And subtle.
Yeah. From one board game movie to another.
Yes.
A game that I just played recently that I really, really enjoyed. And this is a kind of a cool thing that I played it post the hype. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think like with Ark Nova and stuff for you, Mitch, you spoke about it recently and said, oh, I'm not going to play it. It's just a big hype about it and I don't want to play it during that. I think, to be honest, to a degree, you're probably doing the right thing because all of that hype will dissipate and disappear in like a year or so's time.
Mm.
And then you'll play the game and go, yeah, I'm glad I kind of waited and played it when it was a bit more of a calmed environment and atmosphere around the game.
So you picked up Cluedo.
Yes.
This week.
No, Battleships, dude.
Battleships. Battleships.
That's a good game. That's a board game movie right there for sure. It's so good. Rihanna in her prime. But yeah. Like, I actually played Dune Imperium.
Yes.
The same game night that I played Carcassonne at. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's not that I ever thought I wouldn't enjoy it. It's just that I didn't have like a massive interest in playing it for some reason. No particular reason. I was just like, oh yeah, I think, you know what, I think it might have been the area control dudes on the map bit in the middle where it's like you have to be dominance and you have to make sure that you've got enough, you know, military might or whatever they call it, you know, to win that part of the game. And it isn't really like, no one can do things that are that spiteful apart from when you play those cards in the actual round when you do that, when you do that part of the game. But yeah, it was just a worker placement deck builder.
Yeah.
That was just really smooth, really simple to play, but really enjoyable. And I loved that race. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Euphoria to a degree, because Euphoria has that race to 10 victory points and you can get those victory points from different parts of the map, from different tracks. And Dune Imperium has that on that left-hand side of the board with those different sort of
factioned
abilities. Yeah. And that kind of reminded me of that a little bit, but yeah, just, it was a really good game. And you've both played it, right? You've both played
Yes.
it?
Yeah.
Have you only played it solo, Midge?
Yes.
Yeah. And same as you, Death, or?
Mostly. I've played it at the Brisbane Game Days a couple of times now with other people, and it was fantastic. But it's equally great solo. Yeah, love the game, and it's one of the games that it's almost like a go-to solo for me, because it plays in an hour, gives you tension, gives you the full experience of a multiplayer game. It's good fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Very
fun.
Good game.
I'm going to go against both of you here and say that I didn't really enjoy it. And I think it's an interesting sort of angle, because coming from the segue we used to get into this, which is the movie Top Gun and how much you enjoyed the movie, I actually, again, didn't play Dune Imperium when it first came out. I kind of waited a little while for that sort of hype to die down. And at the time, I had done nothing to do with Dune. I'd never seen the original movie. I'd never read the books. I was totally Dune, you know, out there. And so I kind of really wasn't intrigued by it. It didn't sort of really wow me when it sort of really hit the market. And then I went and saw the film, and I really enjoyed the film. I thought the film was awesome and amazing. So on the hype from the film, I was like, righto, it's time to go buy the game now, because that movie was awesome. And if the game's like the movie, then that's fantastic.
And let you down a bit.
And then I don't think it was like the movie at all.
You thought you'd have more of like a thematic Arkham Horror 3rd Edition kind of an experience where it's like deeply...
Yeah, not necessarily narrative. Okay. I just felt like it was a bit... you know, you're just running up those tracks.
Red cube goes here, blue cube.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it was very worker placement / deck buildery.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel like, you know, moving your pieces up those tracks was an alliance with those factions or anything.
I agree. I don't think the game has any thematic connection at all. Like, very, very small.
So I think, so that said, and I guess this is an interesting take, and maybe we want to talk about this for a bit, I don't know, but it's not specifically a board game, but just the effect that your experience, or how your experience can be affected based on where you're coming in from. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I had have come in maybe before I saw the movie and just been like, oh, yeah, it's just a worker placement game with some deck building, then maybe my opinion would have been entirely different.
Yeah.
But because I walked in with that expectation, I was kind of like then a little bit disappointed because it didn't live up to what I was expecting.
Because I'd obviously heard already that you guys had said that it was not, you know, not super thematic, you know, ties to the game, but there are loose ties, you know, there's cards and characters and things like that. But I think that having the Dune TV soundtrack from the TV show playing in the background and a few Jack Daniels heightened my my thematic ties to the game. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, I think the music actually helped. I'm not kidding. Mm. That music was actually really cool. Like, it was kind of, it felt spacey and space opera-y, and it made me feel a little bit like a, you know, a bit more of that kind of vibe. But because I knew that the game wasn't heavily thematically tied to its actions and stuff like that, I just enjoyed it for what it was. And I did enjoy taking those worker placement slots, going up those tracks. And the conflict stuff was great because I had some really fun cards, and it was really close at one point at the end. I almost, I don't know if I took the win, but I almost denied somebody the win in that round by playing a certain card, but he double-crossed me with another card that double-crossed my advantage sort of thing.
Mm.
And he managed to take one of my, I believe one of my fighters off the board and then replace it with one of his own. Like, you know, my guy changed teams almost.
Mm.
But yeah, it was great. And it was a really good group of people to play it with. I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, full of laughs and banter and everyone giving each other plenty of stick. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's my opinion coming from where I've only played it solo. And I did say, even from the first time I played it, when I wasn't thrilled. I mean, it was okay. I guess that's the thing. I was expecting more. I wouldn't say it's a bad game, or it didn't, you know, I just kind of thought, oh yeah, take it or leave it, you know, sort of hit that middle of the range for me. But I think, you know, I said I'd like to try it multiplayer. And I think maybe if you did play it in a group as opposed to solo, then that might give you more of that sort of faction competitiveness sort of feel to it. That I think it was sort of lacking when I played it solo for me.
And also, I've heard like people say that the sound, I'm addicted to the soundtrack. The expansion adds like more cards that make that deck builder aspect a little bit more to the front of the game, like to have a bit more importance.
Mm.
But I felt that the cards were pretty important as they were anyway. Like I really enjoyed choosing some of those cards, and I felt that I could manipulate my deck and get different things working for me. So, yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think the expansion is very good. I didn't feel it changes the deck building aspect much. It does change the board a bit. So the actions that are available at the north side of the board are completely different.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought it's great expansion, but even the base game is very solid for me. But that's an interesting discussion about how you come in, right? Is that connected to the expectation that comes from the IEP as well? Like, immediately my mind went to all of these, you know, Marvel or DC sort of board games. And also, there's an upcoming Kickstarter for the Umbrella Academy, the board game, in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have all these expectations going in because you love the IEP or you love the movie or a comic book or a story you've read, and then the games have a hard time living up to those expectations, right?
Mm, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. To be honest, I don't have like a massive high expectation for IP games because I think there's lots of great games out there that don't have an IP attached to them, so I tend to sort of gravitate towards those a little bit more. I have got a few of the IP games, and I've found them to be okay.
Mm.
I don't know, they've just been okay. But what they do, but I don't know. Like the Dune thing, I have no thematic tie to Dune at all because I've not read the books. I've seen the old film with Sting in it like 10, 15 years ago. I don't really have anything that gives me a massive expectation of like, oh, this house should be with that house and so on and so forth. And one of the games that like, even though it's not a game that I thoroughly enjoyed, was Red Rising. And apparently, a lot of those cards thematically really work together because this house works with this house and this person and this character, brother and sister. So if they're together, they get this massive bonus. So I think some games can do it, like make it thematically work for, you know, for the game.
Mm.
But I think in the Doom one, it just, for some reason, it just doesn't. It's just, you know, worker placement and deck building, and it's all iconography. There's not really any flavor text or anything even on the cards.
Yeah, and it's just very vague. I don't know that there's the older Dune game that's meant to be a lot more sort of, not thematic, but a lot more, you know, relevant to the IP, but I haven't played any of those. So
isn't it the case? There's some sort of, I believe, and I don't know if you guys know the answer, but I feel like I've read somewhere, I've heard somewhere that the original Dune game was the inspiration for Twilight Imperium.
Oh, well, no, they haven't.
But they didn't have the license rights or something along those lines. I don't know if I don't know if I've heard that somewhere or I just dreamt made it. Out. Maybe a lot of people are going to hear me say this and it's going to become a myth. I don't know. but yeah, so I think that's that original Dune game. I don't know, the Dice Men talked about it not that long ago as well in terms of how there's a lot more sort of political aspects to the original Dune game. A lot more of that sort of alliances, allegiances, breaking allegiances that goes into that game. So
that's a huge game, isn't it? That's like a big 5-hour marathon.
Yeah, it's
game.
Like 6-player. It's one of those games where you don't really play them with less players. No. They just don't work. And it's kind of interesting, right? Because we now, the last couple of years, we've lived in this time where, you know, every publisher is trying to create games that play at great at 2 and 3 and 4, but they have a good solo mode and, you know, they kind of appeal to everyone. Mm. And then there's some of these older games that only play at a specific player count.
Mm.
It's very interesting.
But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a great game. I would love to play it again now that I've played it once and know like the basics of what to do. I'd love to see, you know, what I could do if I played it again. Would I buy it? I probably wouldn't buy it because I know someone around the corner that has it with all the fancy bits as well, like the upgraded bits with the actual little worker men and the actual like little the warriors and the little statuettes and all these other things, which is really cool. But like, I just think it's one of those games that, I felt like it really sung at the 4-player mark because it could have just been the group and the banter and all that. And it might still play really well at 2, but it just gave me the feeling that I would enjoy it more with the 4.
Like, 100%.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. So
when you ran through all of your Dune history before though, Adrian, you didn't actually mention whether you've seen the latest film or not. Have you seen it?
I have, and man, like, I'm going to probably upset a whole bunch of people right now. It was all right.
It was all right. Didn't
love it. You know, it's no Top Gun Maverick, mate, but, like, you know.
Oh, okay.
No, it was good. I liked it, but I just, it's one of those, and I like slow films. It doesn't bother me, but we live in a really strange age where it's like, we're going to make the first film that sets up the next like 4 movies. Mm. So you already know going in that there's going to be more.
Mm.
So you have this kind of preconceived notion of like, oh, okay, well, there's going to be more. So I already know that this is just sort of setting up the story, which is still fine. But like, you know, like back in the day when you went and saw Star Wars and it didn't even have A New Hope on the subtitle, you went and saw that film and you thought that was the end. You know, there's no, and you just, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm older and more, I know that there's more coming. Whereas when I was younger, I'd watch a film and be like, oh, this is amazing. And then find out, oh, they're making a sequel. That's awesome. I wonder what's going to happen. Whereas now we already know because of social media and things like that. We know there's more coming. We know that there's going to be another 4 or 5 films and all that. But I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was the best film of last year, which everyone else would have thought it was, I'm sure. Well, a lot of people thought it was. So,
yeah, I don't know.
Still good. Still fine.
And
I think the book people would have loved it, though. I think the people that read the book really enjoyed the film. Like, I think and that's really important. Did. I think that's really, really important to stick true to those books and, you know, use the IP correctly.
As much as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I believe outside of Dune Imperium, I believe you two have been getting a bit of gaming to the table over the weekend just gone. Is that true?
You could say that. We
put a few hours in.
a few hours.
The first thing I did when I got to Def's house and sat down is I opened his blinds and took a photo of the sunlight. And I said, I'm going to take another one of these because it's going to get dark. And then when I arrived at like 9:30 in the morning, And I wasn't wrong.
No. So, yeah, we a few weeks ago, or maybe it's been a couple of months now, a couple of months ago, we wanted to play an 18XX together, and we managed to do that. We played 18 Chesapeake, and then we thought, well, let's move on and play another one. So we played 18/60, but the whole plan all along was leading to this one, which was to play 18/62. Now, 18/62, I think it's also called 18EA, Eastern Counties, because it's set in East England, is one of the most complex 18XX games. It's pretty infamous about that. And we were a bit scared to arrange a group play of this, because when I first, I had only played it once, just two-handed myself, and it took me like 3 days, and I got my brain fried, and that wasn't even the full game. So I said to Adrian, look, let's meet up, just the two of us, actually learn the game properly, go through it. If we like it and it doesn't take, 2 days to play, then we can get our little 18XX crew together and play a 4 or 5 player game.
Could you imagine poor Def having to play one of the heaviest 18XX's games, and I'm his wingman for the whole day, trying to do math and stocks and numbers?
So I'm assuming if it's a 5 hour game, it took you guys 10 because you had Adrian as well.
Yeah.
It was actually not longer than the previous games we've played, except, of course, this time it was just two people, and the previous games were at 4 players. So I'm expecting this will be much longer at 4. But the game is very different to other 18XX games. It feels a lot bigger. It goes up to 8 players. I can't even imagine playing that with 8.
Yeah,
there's 20 companies in the game. 16 of those, they're randomized, and you get 16 in every game. But the main two differences that it has was, one is that there's 3 different types of trains in the game. You've got local, express, and freight trains, and every company only has 1 permit. So when you start a new company, or when you invest in a company, you know that it can only run local trains, or it's an express train company. And they run trains in a different way on the map, and they also generate revenue in a different way. So, for instance, freight trains don't visit stations.
I can already see Mitch trying to concentrate. It's like losing Mitch already. He lost him already. Sit down, Mitch. You'll be all right.
I just want to know when Gordon and James come in.
Yeah, Percy. He's my man.
Percy. Takes the mail on time. Sorry, Def. Keep going.
No, it's all right. Freight trains do like a number of hexes. The express trains are the standard classic 18XX trains, where they visit large stations and offboard areas. And in this game, you have the red areas that go to London and the Midlands and whatever else, but also the ports that go overseas. And then you have the local trains that visit both large and small stations, but they can't visit offboard areas. So it becomes this very involved operating round thing, where you're trying to figure out what each company can do and how much money it can generate. But then here comes the second kick in the game, where in the start of the operating round, companies can do mergers and acquisitions. So that changes the game completely, because you could have like 2 companies with different permits, and you merge them together. Players exchange their, their shares 2-1, and there's some financial shenanigans there.
Yeah.
And then you end up with a company that has 2 types of trains. So it runs, maybe 3 or 4 trains every operating round. And it's just a massive puzzle to figure out during the operating rounds.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. It was great fun. Even a 2-player count, I thought it was great. We had it doesn't have a like this photo finish type excitement at the end that 1860 did with the nationalization of the railways at the end.
Mm.
But we did have very exciting moments at the end with one of the companies almost went down to bankruptcy that Adrian was running, and ultimately at the end was so well run that it jumped ahead of almost all the other companies and gave Adrian a comfortable win. I thought it was fantastic. Looking forward to playing this at four or even five player.
So it sounds like though with the eight players, like it goes up to eight. It sounds like you might have to forego some of those to give your accountant a seat at the table.
Def has a spreadsheet on his phone to do the final scoring. He's made his own spreadsheet.
I have.
But it's the reason why I really wanted to play it is because it's based in East Anglia, which is where I'm from. I'm actually from Norwich, which is on the map there. And I would have, out of the 37 hexes on the board, I would have been to 30 of them at least. I know all the towns, the little villages. I've been there. I know the roads. I know you grew up there. So it was really cool to play that and see some of the sort of thematic ties to those places. But it just, it blew me away with the whole merging companies thing, what would be capable in those games. It's really interesting. Like, it's really fun as well. Like, because we played it and essentially we're playing almost a normal 18XX game that we'd played before, but our trains can only do certain routes and that's fine. But then when I was like, okay, I think I'm going to merge these companies now, we had to get the book out again. And we're like, right, how do we do this?
How does this work?
Yeah. No idea what we're doing. And like, we'd read through the book and merge these companies and stuff. And that's when it became really interesting, because that other company that was almost bankrupt, I was like, man, I might merge them into this company and have three permits and then run three different types of trains. But because of the era that we were in, or the, what do they call it? Is it a phase? Because of the phase we were in, they could only run any three trains, but so the other company that I already had was running three trains already, so they wouldn't really benefit from the merge. So it was, it was a lot of like knowing when to strike and knowing when to merge and knowing when to acquire new companies and stuff. But
great. So, I mean, obviously these based in, you know, real places. You've just talked about how it was, you know, the places where you grew up, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you know, in terms of the way those trains were set up, as you said, Def, and then the merging of the companies and so on, is that a historical accurate representation of what went on with the development of the rail industry in that area?
Yeah, 100%. So all of these games, that's where they start from. They start from the historic, facts about the companies and which ones, you know, struggled to survive, and some of them ended up, you know, acquired or ended up getting nationalized by the government. And most of these games are actually set up to lead down these not predetermined paths, but somehow, you know, they have a rough idea of where this is going. But obviously, they're board games, so they tend to deviate from those paths as well. So, to me, and every one of these rule books explains the history at the start, which is really interesting for me to read. I actually wish they did a bit more of that, to be honest. But it is very, very interesting. There usually is a matrix in the game that explains what each company does, what was its origin, and what happened to it, and all those sorts of things. And you know, the game mechanics are meant to, I guess, force the game decisions down this road where a lot of these companies will get merged, a lot of these companies will get acquired, some of them will get bankrupt. And it's meant to be, you know, not an accurate representation of the facts, but it's meant to recreate the historic element of the games.
I actually looked up a couple of the railway companies when I got home, just because I was interested in it, and the East Norfolk Railway, which is one of the ones that I had,
the ENR,
they it was really interesting about some of their history. They started in like 1848 and then they closed in like 1872 or something like that. But yeah, they had proposed to do this new railway link between like Beccles and somewhere else. I think it was Fakenham, and something happened to their licensing or permits or whether, so they lost that, and because they lost that, they went bankrupt and they basically disappeared. But yeah, there's definitely historical stuff in there, and the fact that all these little railway companies are real companies,
actual companies that existed,
that existed back then, is pretty interesting. And they would all have their own little individual stories and their own little, you know, tale to tell. But yeah, it's definitely worth looking them up and stuff on Wikipedia. And some of the pictures and stuff on the actual companies, they show you like this is, you know, the ENR, and this is their one of the stations that was on there.
Yeah, that's right.
And the photos were taken like way back then, and it's pretty impressive. Like,
yeah, I think there is an opportunity there to, you know, for future games, and I'm not sure if any of the 18XX publishers or are listening to this, but there's an opportunity to include a little bit more information about these companies in the games, because I do think it would make a little bit of a difference and get you a little bit more invested in the games. But yeah, like you said, Adrian, there's already quite a lot in there. Every charter that you get, which is basically the company has a big photo or drawing of its home station or one of its origin stations, gets you a bit of information there. But yeah, definitely a theme that, you know, would welcome more historic information for sure.
And you mentioned before, Def, about how you had this game has the different types of trains. But I'm assuming that that's a choice you make as the owner, or as when you're playing the game. Do you want to diversify into different types of trains, or are those trains linked to certain companies, or are they player-based? Is it like an asymmetrical thing, or how do those different trains fit in?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when the game begins, you draw 16 out of the 20 companies in the game, and those 16 are the ones that are in the game. So every game, 4 companies are out of the game. But the way it works is you have these tiles that are split into the 3 permit types, local, express, and freight, and you shuffle them and deal one of them to each company at the start of the game. So before the game begins, you already know what type of license each company has, and you can't change that during the game. So when you decide to start a company or invest, you know what kind of trains they can run, which is a big part of the strategy in the game. So the only way to get more permits in a company is to merge companies, because then all of the assets of the constituent companies come together in the new formed company. It's very interesting, because I think that, you know, the operations in this game obviously are quite important and a huge part of the game, and I quite like that. I think that there's some 18XX games that focus a lot in the financial aspect around, you know, manipulating the stock market and, you know, dumping stocks and, you know, maybe offloading bankrupt companies to unsuspected people and, you know, things like that. And I think that the ones that are focusing more on the operation side, like this one, they suit my style a bit more. But yeah, we had a great time, even at 2-player, which, you know, is not really the way to play these games. And we probably missed out a bit on the bidding phase, because at the start of each round, this is another difference to other 18XX games, where you have like a stock round where you buy and sell shares, and then you have operating rounds where the companies operate. Well, in this game, you also have a parliament round in between, where the directors or the investors in the game go to the parliament and bid to the government to start a new company. And when that happens, the government funds the company 100%. So these companies are 100% capitalized, while when you start a company during a stock round, they only get capitalization based on the stocks you buy from them. So if you buy 50%, they will get their par price times 5. But if you start them with government backing, then they get 100% of their value. no matter how many shares people have bought. And I think we did probably miss out a bit on that because there was just two of us. We did a bit of money. We started a company. The other person didn't really try to, you know, block that or outbid it. And I think that aspect of the game in a 4 or 5 player game would probably be a lot more
cutthroat
involved.
Yeah, I think so. Because it's no, if I outbid you, then you're just going to outbid me on the other one that I want. And it just kind of goes back and forward. Whereas when you've got five people, it's like, there's no way I'm going to let Def get that for $50. Like, it's not happening. I'm going to bet 100. And if he wants it, he's going to have to pay 105 or, and then just keep going. Because there's only $5 increment or £5 increments. So you could be bidding around the table for a while. And that's fun. Like, that's also a fun part of the game is that bidding mechanism. So one of the things I found about this one, though, as well, it was only 2-player, but it was so tight on the board because only 37 hexes. Now, I don't know if that's a smaller board. I don't know because it's actually called a Railway Mania in the East Counties.
Yeah, so that's like, the full name of the game, yeah.
Is that the mania? Because it feels incredibly cramped. Like,
it could be, but I think
8-player would just blow your mind because you'd be all on top of each other. Like, that would definitely be mania. So,
well, I imagine that, you know, in the eastern counties of England, there's probably not a lot of expansive room for railways. Probably is quite tight and, you know, built in on top of each other.
True.
Yeah, you know, the map is surprisingly small, and especially when you sort of open it up and see that there's 16 companies in play in every game, you go, well, this is not going to go down nice and comfortable.
It's a turf war.
Because in many 18xx games, when you see the map, you have like empty hexes or hexes with villages, the little dots, and then the big stations where the trains usually stop, they're spread out in the map. In this map, like every hex or neighboring hex or every two hexes, you have a large station, and they're almost always home stations to some of these companies. So it is extremely, extremely tight.
So as somebody who puts a fairly significant amount of weight on the aesthetics and the themes in they enjoy in the games, do you think we'll ever see a 18xx game that actually has some art in it?
I think
any art.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do. Yeah, I mean, the most art, like the most art I've seen in terms of like effort actually put in to distinguish the game to every other of the hundreds 18xx games was 18 Chesapeake, and even in that case, I think it's like a cult thing because even in that case, the nice side of the map. Like, they've redrawn the map. It's really nice. It has modern pastel colors. You know, it's a pleasure to look at. They still did the other side as the traditional red and black and yellow type map, which feels very, you know, 1960s or, you know, I think it just goes with the territory, you know. It's, I don't think these games are... I don't know.
Do you think they've got their market? They've got their key audience, which is the people that are really into them. And it's almost a little bit of a, like you say, a cult or a religious sort of thing where they want to stick to the original and they don't want to change out of that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I wonder if that actually connects it to the theme somehow as well, because a lot of these games, like, I mean, 1829, which was the original 18xx game, was published in, the mid-50s. Or something like that. So, you kind of have to think, is that, mid-50s, maybe mid-70s? But, you know, you almost kind of think, does this actually connect to the theme? Does it connect to the, you know, steam locomotives that of that era that was, you know, all about evolution of the railways and cutthroat financially, and not that you can't make a great art and graphic design or illustrations out of that. I imagine you could, but wouldn't that feel almost out of place now in a world where, like, Yeah, all of these games are exactly the same look and feel. I don't know.
Well, I just think that, you know, I mean, you know, and I guess it's something sort of that we as a group have been striving to do, and that is, you know, make board gaming less a niche thing and more sort of mainstream, you know, trying to get people to, you know, be interested in board games and to play them. And you know, that means hopefully roping in people that have never played board games before and things like that. I would think that having a nice looking board where it maybe looks like a map, the, you know, the tracks have got some little artwork on them, so they look like little tracks. I don't know. That sort of stuff. I've never played an 18XX, so I'm not sure exactly what that would do to the actual gameplay.
Yeah.
But
it would contribute.
Well, I just think that it would make it more accessible to people that maybe haven't played 18XXs before. And, you know, there's a saying that I heard somewhere that I think is great, right, which is a high tide raises all boats, right? So, you know, getting people, new people into the hobby and having the hobby become more popular is only going to benefit those already in the hobby. You know, so if having good art and having, you know, something that was more accessible to people to come in and broaden the hobby was going to make it better for everybody, that can only be a good thing, can't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think they are starting to go down that road a little bit. You had the Kickstarter Shikoku, which came out recently, which does have like quite like it's kind of like Chesapeake, has a nice board, has a more visual appeal. There's also Moon 21 or 21 Moon. Like that's also pretty interesting. They're doing a futuristic based 18XX, but it's obviously the 21st century, so 21 Moon, and it's based on the moon. It's very similar. It's exactly similar, the same mechanics as an 18XX, but you're on the moon. So people like space games. Like some people just don't like train games. I never played a train game until I played these games. Like I played Ticket to Ride and that was it, like nothing else. And now I love them. And I think that we spoke about it a little bit when we were playing. You wouldn't want to play 1862 as an entry game for 18XX. Like, so there is like a stepping stone, just kind of like worker placement games. You wouldn't just go and grab On Mars as your first worker placement game. It tends to be a sort of stepping stone progress where you're like, oh, I really like that. What about this one? I want to try something that's higher up. And I know that obviously they have an advantage because On Mars, you know, tool art, it looks beautiful. Components are all beautiful. But I don't know. There's just something about the 18XX game itself, the mechanics and what happens in the game that makes those moments. It doesn't matter what it looks like, if I'm honest.
Be careful. Are you starting to sound like me now?
I know. I saw that was that 9 hours we spent together on Saturday. You brainwashed me. But I tell you what is really important in that game is like really clear guidance and information on how much revenue people are getting and how the revenue moves and works and how much your stock's worth and how they move up and down. Mm. Having that really clear and really easy to follow, it's like that makes it so much easier. Like,
It's important to mention that you mentioned 21 Moon. So there's a Kickstarter in a couple of days when you listen to this episode from All Aboard Games. So Scott Peterson will be he launches a campaign once a year and then produces 3 or 4 of these games. So I think there's going to be 5 in this case, 21 Moon between them. And he puts effort into these games. Like the art is nice. I got 18 Chesapeake and 1860. And I'm really happy with those. So if you want to have a look at them, that might be a good opportunity. They're also quite, I would say, reasonably priced as well compared to what you can buy them for in the market afterwards, which is quite expensive. One thing that I think has affected this, Mitch, that you mentioned it and you're right. I think one thing that's affected this sort of art approach or non-art approach is that these games predate almost all modern board games, and they come from an era where people, basically everybody with a garage and, you know, a way to print things could publish an 18XX game, and they still have, I think, extremely low print runs.
Yeah.
So what happens is they have the relevant investment put in them. Now there is a massive market for these games, but because there's so many of them, each individual game I would think has a smaller print run than any of the Bonder and Born games that we play. So that I would suspect contributes as well. But it would be phenomenal to see, maybe an 18XX one day designed by, that has the graphic design done by, Ian O'Toole or someone. He could put quokkas in for fun. Easter eggs.
Well, Andrew Bosley could do what do they say? Anthropomorphic animal creatures getting around on their little carts.
Evidently, 18XX.
Exactly. I just looked up Shikoku, actually, Adrian, when you mentioned it. And I've got to say that that board does look already much more intriguing to someone like me who's very shallow and just wants to see. No. It does. To me, that's like, it's not major. It's not game changing necessarily. Yeah. It just makes it that little bit more like, oh, that looks nice. And I can see the mountains and I can see the fields. Yeah. And I can see the, on the map and stuff. The other thing for me that's kind of like a barrier to entry for these games is what sounds like a hell of a lot of maths. Someone who, I think I got booted out of the lowest level math because I couldn't count to five on my fingers. That to me,
that's
that
because you've only got three fingers.
Well, there is that. to me, that's a bit of a barrier because I'm like, I don't want to sit down and really have to work out, what percentage of shares does this company own? Does that company own? What's my return on investment? I have 10% off these shares and I've got 10 of them and I've got 5 of them and they'd be 25%. I'm just like, I'm done. If I feel like if I need to call, my year 9 maths teacher, Mr. Easer, and say, how do I work this out? Probably not going to enjoy it. Is it that heavy with math?
No, it's like, that's a bit exaggerated. There is a bit of that, but... they have like revenue trackers on the board, and they also have ways to show you how much the shares are moving. So on the stock market, where you are tracking the value of each company's shares, every box has a tiny marker above them where it shows different, thresholds of price. So if your stock is on, say, £100, then if your company generates £230 revenue this operating round, then above the 100 marker where your stock is, it would say, it would say something like 11 to 20 or 11 to 9 or 10 to 19, it moves up one. 20 to 29, it moves up two. So you immediately know how much that moves. There is a bit of math in terms of calculating how much money each investor will get. So if the company generates £230, how much would you get, Mitch? You have 30% of it. How much would Adrian get that has 60% of it, etc.? But in an interesting coincidence, Aid in Chesapeake included an extra table in that, which is it's like a automatic calculation of that. So it has all of the revenues above it. A reasonable amount above, I think, 100 or 150. And it has all the breakdowns up to 60% of how much you own. So you immediately look at, what was my revenue? 430, and I've got 5 shares. This is how much I get. You don't even have to do the math. And that's extremely clever. I don't know why all the games don't do that.
Yeah.
I think it would massively help, especially in longer playing counts, because there's a lot of that, right? It's definitely something that you do, and it's prevalent during the game. So, but there's some ways around it,
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds like, at least a bit of a solution. It reminds me of the smartphone ink player.
I was going to say that. You'll love it. Smartphone player aid all over again.
So that's good. Well, that's great, guys.
I mean, the key is to have someone that's really good at math, and you just go, Def, how much do I get? And he goes, 74. Oh, sweet, 74. I'll take that. Easy.
Yeah. Do the calculations in Greek, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's, that's 1862, Railway Mania in the Eastern Counties. It's actually published by GMT. and Mike Hutton is the designer. So yeah. Looking forward to playing that again 100%.
Fair enough. Well, I've been a little bit, as you know, deaf. I've been a little bit buried this week by Cuba Libre, which is another coin game that we have been sort of talking about. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about it because it's. I talked about Andean Abyss on a couple of episodes ago, and it's very similar, but just a fair bit smaller. So I actually quite enjoyed it. For that reason, because it's just a lot more sort of smoother and streamlined and everything. A lot of the operations are very much the same as in Andean Abyss, so it's easy to learn, easy to get along through. But the game I'm going to talk about today is a game that has been either in my top 10 or very close to my top 10 games of all time for a long time, and it doesn't get as much sort of recognition as I think it probably deserves. And that game is called Rajahs of the Ganges.
Yes, I haven't played that yet.
Have you played it yet, Adrian?
I haven't played it either. I think I saw you guys playing at the retreat, but I think it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, I'm going to bed, and I didn't join. But it looks
we
really
did actually
cool.
start. Yeah, we did actually start very late. It's it's a dice resource worker placement tile laying game. So there's a fair bit to it that's going on, and I think the one thing that seems to be it gets known for is the mechanic that I believe Ark Nova kind of pinched from it. Well, you know, took inspiration from, I'll say, in that you have two different victory point tracks that go around the outside of the board. One is money or currency, and the other, I think, is prestige or something like that. The interesting part is that one goes clockwise, the other one goes anti-clockwise. So they're traveling in opposite directions around the board, and you have a marker on each, and the first person whose markers actually cross each other, that triggers the end of the game.
Yeah, all right.
So it gives you this kind of interesting dynamic where you can go, well, I'm just going to focus on currency. I'm just trying to build up heaps of currency. And, you know, pushing your currency marker right around the board quickly might be a good strategy, you know, because you'll get that around quick and then maybe it'll catch right up to your prestige marker that maybe hasn't moved all that much. Or conversely, you can focus on the other way, the prestige, and, you know, push that around the board quickly. Or you can do both. You can, you know, do a little bit of both, and it's going to be – so it's sort of one of those you can't really tell who's in front because it's not just whoever's ahead on any particular track. You got to try and look at the differences between, you know, where they're at. And I think that's a really good part of this game in terms of being something different. It's a you know, interesting way for that to play out in terms of your scoring and the end of the game. In terms of the gameplay, you have – workers that work very similar to any other worker placement type workers where there's a number of different action spots on the board. You also have dice resources, which are different colors and obviously different numbers based on what you roll them. So you may take a particular worker placement spot and that spot will cost you maybe a green die to a certain value. So you have to have a green die you have to have a die of a certain value in order to do that action.
But the dice are not the workers themselves.
The dice aren't the workers themselves, yeah, no. Okay. They're a resource that then you'll spend you've chosen the particular space. And then you also have a home player board, which is like your sanctuary, I guess, where you start off with essentially nothing in it. But then you can use your dice to purchase, so the value on your dice and the colors of the dice will allow you to purchase tiles that then you can place into your little sanctuary. And that becomes a little bit of a tile placement puzzle because you have to maintain the road connections as you place the tiles down. Mm-hmm. You need to have them connecting back to your homestead or palace or whatever you want to call it. And each of those tiles will have different resources or shops and things on them that will increase the effectiveness of certain worker placement actions when you take them. So there's this interactivity between building up your little home board and the abilities that will trigger on the home board when you take certain actions on the main board with your worker placements. It's a bit of point salady. There's a river track that runs right up the center of the board where you have a boat meeple and you can take actions to move the boat up the river, and there's different bonuses you pick up the further you move along the river. Like a lot of worker placement games, there's if you move certain distance around the scoring tracks or up that river track, you can unlock additional workers. So as the game goes along, what you're able to do on your turns is increasing sort of exponentially because you start getting more and more workers. I mean, you can utilize them better. And so it's just it's a really cool game. I think it's one of the better games that uses dice as resources like that. And it's what I was playing a couple of weeks ago with Harry, who's a friend of the podcast. And there are moments where you can sort of overspend your dice, and then you'll have a few turns where you're really scraping because you're like, great, and I don't have any dice now. And then you have to spend dice to sort of generate more dice, and then it becomes this sort of, you know, slow burn where you're trying to build up those dice resources again before you can start really taking those big sort of actions that sort of, you know, get you the most benefit back. But yeah, so it's that's essentially the summary of it. I'd highly recommend anyone who is into worker placement and that sort of stuff to have a look at it and have a go.
As soon as you started talking, I saw a couple of photos from the board and the dice, and I immediately thought, I want to play this. It has this almost distinctive look that some of these very traditional German Euro games have. Like, I'm thinking like Voyages of Marco Polo or Castles of Burgundy or you just know that they're solid designs, I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's really funny because we were just talking about theme before, about Dune Imperium and the theme, being a bit vague and not really. The theme in these games is completely irrelevant. It doesn't matter because the mechanics are so solid, right? And they're engaging and you're having fun. It looks very cool. And the player boards look quite interesting. The game on the player boards to place your tiles. Is it a long game, Mitch?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think it probably runs about an hour to an hour and a half.
Okay.
This is the thing. You can kind of control how long you necessarily want it to be. You can sort of build it up, you might want to really push a particular one of those tracks around, focus on, hammering that out so that it's quickly. Or you might say, well, okay, I've really pushed that around. Maybe I'll move my other piece around, work on the other track. So it really sort of depends. You can sort of rush to the ending. I will say that when we played it at the retreat, from memory, I think Mike won. So that just goes to show anyone can play it. Anyone could win it.
Talking about Mike, Inca Brand and Marcus Brand, the two designers that did Raj of the Ganges, also did Word Slam, which is the game that he spoke about last week. So,
right, okay. And they also...
a lot of the exit games. They did
games. the exit series.
Yeah. Loads, heaps of them. So, diverse designers.
That's right. And, Raj of the Ganges is nothing at all like any of the exit games I've played. And I haven't played Word Slam, but I would attest that it's probably not the same.
No, not at all. Very diverse. But that's cool. I like when that happens, when they're doing lots of different types of games, not just doing the same game over and over kind of style.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that this is probably good at any player count, Mitch? Because some of these sort of very classic Euro designs, they play well at two, they play well at three, they play well at four. It doesn't really have it like an optimum or desired player count.
No, it plays smoothly at pretty much any player count. I mean, as with most worker placement games, the main interaction that you're going to have is taking the worker placement spots. So there's actually the board comes double-sided. So there's I think it's 2 to 3 players on one side and a 4 player on the other side. So you actually have different number of worker placement spaces available depending on which side of the board you're playing. The other area where it's there's a bit of a player sort of interaction is when you're choosing to buy the tiles, they come out off the top of some piles. So, you know, you both might be trying to work up to get, you know, maybe, you know, 8 value in green pips on dice to buy that tile because it's got some good resources on it. So then it almost becomes a race because everyone's going, oh, that's a good tile, I'm trying to grab that. And obviously one person's going to get it and the other three are going to miss out. So, you know, there is that as well.
No solo mode?
No. Which is interesting.
I
just read that
and I was like, hang on a second. You said you don't buy games and it's got a solo mode.
I bought this before I stopped buying games that don't have solo modes. Okay. But there is actually a fan-made solo variant that's available for download on BGG. I have downloaded it and printed the cards off. I haven't actually played it.
Okay. Cool.
So I can't speak to the solo mode, but it is a really fun game. I believe they've also done a spin-off roll and write version.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a Rajahs of the Ganges, the dice
rollers,
game.
Rollers of the Ganges?
The Dice Charmers, it's called.
Is it?
Yeah, the dice, there you go.
Nice. I was just looking at that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I've read a couple of people say it's good. I haven't played that one myself either, which, again, I'm a roll and write guy too, so I don't know why I haven't actually got around to getting that and having to try, but it's on my radar for certain.
You think you'd be able to just buy the pads, right? Because you've got like 1,000 dice in that Raja of the Ganges box. Do you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't even need any dice. You got like 50 dice.
Yeah, maybe not. You'd be pretty upset though if you bought the dice game before you'd bought the...
Yes, I know that bit. you can print the sheet off and give it a whirl. Like, I'm sure you can.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely, as I said, it's definitely my radar because Rajahs is right up there. And I think it sort of sits in that weight space it's kind of like that next level. I wouldn't call it a gateway. There's probably a little bit too much going on, a little bit too point salady. But at the same time, it plays really smooth. It's not super heavy. So you could probably, you know, I'm sure that like my wife, if I could convince her to sit down at the table, I'm sure she'd love it.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you find is there like a little bit of a runaway leader thing with that with the crossings and stuff, or is it pretty even? Do you find that someone that's got a little bit of prestige but a lot of the income, they tend to always do really well as opposed to the other way around, or you haven't really
found? No, I find it's balanced really well because if you have a look at those of you who can look on BGG, I know that you can't really see what we're talking about. But if you have a look at the board, you'll see
Mitch will show you all through interpretive dance.
There's the little grey spots on the outside of the currency, and then the round sort of semicircular spots, the fame or the prestige, which is the other track. So it's 2-1 essentially. So for every two of the currency that you get, it's equal to getting one of the prestige or the fame. So it's probably easier to gather that money quickly, but you're moving around the board slower than you'll move quicker with the prestige. I know the last time we played, there was a 4-player game and there was one person we were like, oh, this person's done really well and they're out in front and we're never going to catch them. And then a couple of turns later, and I think it comes down to this, like what I was talking about before, you can go out hard and really spend your dice, get some big returns on investment, but then once you've done you're out of dice. Mm. So it's almost like a sprint in a marathon, if you would. Mm. You shoot out early and then you don't have the resources. So you kind of got to then that slow burn back to get back on top of things. So this person had jumped out to quite a big lead and we were like, we're never going to catch them. They're way out in front. And then 2-3 turns later, it's like, oh, hang on a second. I don't know if he's going to hold on because, you know, Harry's coming home strong. I was coming around on the prestige track. So, and it was so close that you couldn't tell. Like, we got to the point where we're like counting the number of squares in between our counters to work out who's trying to, you know, who's in front and who do we need to catch. So, and the guy that was out in front, he actually ended up getting there in the end, but it was a lot closer than we thought it was going to be at the start because it does have that kind of momentum balance, you know.
I really want to play it, so.
Yeah. So, without further ado, I think we'll call it quits for our little chit chat, and we'll get into the serious business and move on to the bracket battle.
Hey guys, it's Mike here. I'm here to talk to you about Advent Games. Have you bought a game from Advent yet? If you haven't, you definitely should. Dean and his team are absolutely amazing. They've got an amazing website, really heavily curated with all sorts of different categories from deck building and rare games. And look, just go check it out. They offer $10 flat rate shipping all around Australia. They also directly support the podcast Game Days up in Sydney, so you can go by and say hello. Guys, go check out Advent. You won't regret it.
Okay, so this week's bracket battle, which is brought to us by GameToppers LLC, who I believe are running a Kickstarter at the moment. So if you're interested in a table topper or a playmat, check out the stock that they have. Really high quality, good stuff. And it makes it a lot bit easier and cheaper than buying a full-sized custom-built game table. So bracket battle, gentlemen, we have one to wrap up tonight. It is that little engine that could, Targi.
Choo-choo.
Versus the massive might of Anachrony. So Targi was an outlier. I think everyone underestimated the power of the old Targi in the first round because it was a small two-player game. But it absolutely – I can't remember who it was up against now. I'd have to go look it up.
Yokohama or whatever it's called. Yokohama.
Yokohama, was it?
And TI4.
And it blitzed it.
It blitzed TI4.
Targi smashed it. Where's this sort of fella coming from? So seeing it come up against Anachrony, I thought anything's possible. Anything's possible for little Targi. So where do you reckon we're going to sit on this one, folks?
The Mind Clash fans are fanatics. They love that stuff. So I just think that Anachrony will...
What did you just say about me?
Yeah, sorry. I know. I was looking at you when I said it. I just think that it's just, they're massively into that game. But I actually think it'll be a lot closer than you'd expect. Which
I had a look at the Facebook voting maybe a few days ago. And, I was surprised by the amount of votes Targi was getting. It was very close, maybe even at some point. It's a good game. It's well deserved to get these runs, I think.
All right. Well, let's get on to the results that everybody's hanging on the edge of their seats for. And as it happens, Targi has come to the end of its journey. Anachrony goes through to the next round by about 35 odd votes. Which, over a grand scheme of things, is really not that much. I think it's commendable, the performance that Targi put in. I know there's a lot of people in the comments section on our posts on Facebook that were getting right behind Targi, trying to pump it up and get it across the line. Unfortunately, the hill was too big to climb with Anachrony. Maybe you can travel back in time, try again another.
Change bracket. The votes.
Change the votes.
Go back and
stop the count.
All right, so Anachrony moves on, and that will bring us to our next battle that we're going to set up.
Oh, boy.
We're down to the quarterfinals now.
Yeah, this is it.
So not many left in it.
There's eight, and that's it. It's going to be done.
Eight games left, four matches in this round at least.
They'll be done like the Celtics were done at the weekend. Boom. There's my sports reference for you.
Shush. I was
at Def's house.
I don't want to do this anymore.
I'm hanging up.
Sorry, I have to go. Just while we're talking, I was really into that at your house, by the way. I was like on the edge of my seat watching that.
I was way too invested in it. I was like, we're playing an 18XX game. Oh, can we just pause for 3 minutes?
Sorry, if anyone doesn't know, there was a basketball game. The Celtics were playing and someone else was playing and it was so tight at the end. It was like 1 point in it and it was the last minute. And it was really interesting to watch because I don't watch any sport and I was hooked within about 30 seconds. So
awesome. So next time I come up there, we're just going to watch basketball the whole time.
I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind watching a whole game. It'd be cool. Yeah.
All right. Careful what you wish for. All right. So moving on. The bracket that we've got today is the family crazy fun favorite of Quacks of Quedlinburg up against the dice chucking monolith Too Many Bones.
Wow. Mm. This is going to be huge. This is going to be huge, right?
Two very big games, a lot of popularity in both these spaces. Very different games, mind you.
Still releasing content for both.
Sorry?
Still both releasing content.
Still both releasing content, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Alchemist just came out recently and Too Many Bones. And
Unbreakable
as well.
Is not far away.
Hmm.
So I think I know where Def sits on this one. So I'm going to go to Adrian to begin with. Now, Adrian, you've had an interesting sort of history with Too Many Bones, haven't you?
Have I?
Yeah, I think you kind of enjoyed it but didn't love it.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be more like the Arkham Horror 3rd Edition thing, like an adventure game as opposed to like a battle arena game. And when I started playing it, I was like, this isn't what I thought it was. And then it really threw me. Then I was like, well, where's all the, like, you know, adventure-y stuff bits? And it just didn't have as much in it as I thought it was. But I believe that, is it Undertow that adds a bit more of that in it? Or one of them adds some more of that kind of element in?
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it. I loved building the character. That was obviously the best bit. That is the best bit of the whole game, right? Upgrading and all that. And I played patches, which, you know,
that's R.I.P. Right up your patches. Alley being a healer. Yeah,
that's all I would play forever. Loved it. I just don't own it because I just don't think I'd play it enough. So, and it's not a cheap game by any means, but it is a beautiful game. Like it's lush, all those dice trays and all those, every like unique piece to it is cool. I really like the picking the lock mechanism where you're trying to open the treasure box to try and get the bonus. That? I liked that. I know you'd hate that.
I mean, I like the fact that it's there, but it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
It's, because it's super hard.
Yeah.
That's super hard.
I did like it. And I did like that it was hard because it's, you know, you're not going to always get it. And that's kind of cool because you don't want to always get it. Otherwise, it becomes boring. Too it's easy. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really thought that was really cool. And I mean, I love how the boss Chip or the monster Tyrant, or the person if you're fighting against Chip sits under the stack of the health tokens. So therefore, like, you can see how much health everybody has by their stacks of chips. That's very clever. And it also, you can weigh up like who's a big threat, who's not, who's on low health, who do you want to quickly kill off to then move on to something else. And
it's funny you should mention that, Adrian, because we just spoke about Burn Cycle a few days ago on a couple of episodes ago. And one of the things I said was like, well, in Too Many Bones, it has this 3D view and you can, you know, see things, you know, how they're different. But Burn Cycle, everything's flat. So it's interesting you mentioned that.
Well, you know that, like, when a boss comes out and he's got 12 health or whatever it is, and he's just this massive stack, and you're like, he's a bit big. I'll stay away from him. Everyone else can fight him. So,
and what about on the other side of that coin with Quacks then?
And Quacks, like, I like Quacks. I think it's a great game. I tend to just play it as a sort of entry game or a gateway game to people who don't play many games. It's not my favorite game, but it is my favorite bag building game because it's the only one I have. Like, it's the only one.
An easy choice. Sounds like a lack of options rather than a preference.
Exactly. But I actually really, I like it. But you know what? Sometimes I think it's a bit long, if I'm honest. I think sometimes it's a bit long. And
it's nine rounds, isn't it?
I think so, from memory, about nine rounds. And, you know, even though it's simultaneous play, when you're playing with a six-year-old who's constantly looking in the bag, it doubles the time because you're not really playing it together. You're just sitting there watching him making sure he's not cheating every 5 seconds, you know. Like, oh, I just dropped something on the floor. Hang on a sec. I'll pick it up and just, like, root through the bag. And, oh, I got a yellow one and I've already got a white one down, so I get to remove that. I'm like, yeah, good try. Put it back in the bag. Like, so it has, I think Too Many Bones has those big epic moments in, right? And I think Quacks also has that. Like, they have them big epic family moments where you pull that chip out and you're like, yes, I did it. I just got past what I needed to get you know, the
amount. For me, it's the other way. The big moments is when I, you know, when I pull the token out and I explode all the time. But yes.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah,
that's exactly. A big moment for everybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. Someone else's great moment, not yours. But like, so, yeah, I think they're both good. I love playing Quacks with Finn still. It's still a game that we get out to the table somewhat regularly now, even though we've had it for, you know, 2.5 years. So
yeah, right.
Yeah.
And over
which
to you,
one
Jeff,
are you going to vote then?
Yeah.
He didn't really.
If I'm going to vote, I would. Oh, I don't know. It's like if I was hanging out with you guys, I might play Too Many Bones. Because, yeah, I'd probably vote Too Many Bones. If it was my choice to play one today, I'd choose Too Many Bones because I don't play it. Whereas Cracks, right. I play a lot. So,
over to you, Def. Tell us why Too Many Bones is a better game and it's going to win.
I'll tell you why it's going to win, because Mitch is going to make 1,400 accounts and just vote Too Many Bones 1,400 times. So that's why I'll probably win.
It's only fair.
What do you mean I'm going to make them? I've had them made since the start. I've been voting every time it turns up.
True.
I think this is going to be a very interesting bracket battle, because both games are very, very popular in our community.
Mm.
And I think Too Many Bones' popularity has increased because of its wider availability the last 12 months or so. You can get it easier, you know. Etherworks had it in stock for quite some time, and you know, some retail shops have it. So I think it's going to be a very, very big battle. I think that, you know, people that play mostly family games absolutely love Quacks. We love Quacks as a family. We play it a lot. I do think that it has like a sort of, you know, specific lifespan on the table. You can't, like, I can think of a few games, family games, that I would gladly play back to back. Quacks isn't one of them. But as Adrian said, it has these hilarious moments where Def always explodes, because that's just what happens, and everybody laughs, and it's awesome, right? On the other hand, obviously, Too Many Bones are a completely different thing. I think in the end, it is the better game. It is the more sort of rewarding experience. But again, it depends where you're coming from and your perspective, what kind of games you're playing. It's difficult to get, for example, my girls to play Too Many Bones. I haven't tried that, to be honest, but they always get a great laugh out of Quacks. I think it's going to be a big battle. Like, my vote is going to go to Too Many Bones, but I do think this is going to be a huge, huge battle.
Yep, I'd agree. I don't think it's. I don't think there's a clear winner here. But
does we know anyone, where your vote is going.
I was going to say, do either of you want to see if you can guess what I will vote for?
Is there money in it?
Yeah,
we're all hoping. So that's a 3-0 so far to Too Many Bones. So if you are a Quacks fan, get onto our socials, onto Facebook or Discord or onto Instagram, and vote for your favorite. And if you are a Too Many Bones fan, do exactly what Def and I and Adrian are going to do, and vote for Too Many Bones to see it go through to the next round. And on that note, we will move on to our oaths. But before we do get onto our oaths, I'd just like to take this opportunity to put a shout out to all of our Patreons who support us every month. We very much appreciate that. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without the support of our Patreons. So thank you to everyone who has done so. If you would like to be a part of that, support the show, you can go to patreon.com, search for Board Game Barbecue, and choose a level at which you would like to support the team here. If that's not something you feel up to doing, then you can support us in other ways. You can support us by joining our Discord community and being part of the discussions that we have every day, sometimes more than I can keep up with. But there's a great group of people in there in Discord. You can visit our Facebook community at the Board Game Barbecue community, participate in the chats, vote for our bracket battles, all sorts of stuff in there. You could leave reviews for us on Apple Podcasts or the new star. Is it a star system on Spotify? You can just say, yeah, it was really good.
No, I don't just know. One of those. You just put like 1 to 5 stars and that's it.
And there you go. And if you do listen via an Apple podcast, you can actually leave a review there in words. And if you do so, Dan, our elder statesman, will read it out on the next show that he's on. So thank you to everyone who supports us in any way, shape, or form. And whilst talking about that, I might just quickly mention that we have some game days coming up.
Yes.
So we have the Sydney Game Day, which is coming up on June 18th at the Castle Hill RSL. There are still some tickets left, so I would suggest if you're intending to getting along, jump online as soon as you hear this and grab some because they won't last long. So that's going to be a great day. After that, we have Brisbane coming up in August. August 20, I think, Adrian?
Yeah.
Confirmed for us?
Yep.
Yep. And also Melbourne the week later on the 27th, I think. So plenty of game days to be involved in if you're willing to travel. Otherwise, get a ticket to your capital city and be there and come up and say hi, and we'll play some games. With that, it's oath time. And both of the guys are looking down at their desks and staring sheepishly away from the cameras. So I'm not sure how this is going to go tonight. So let's start with Def. How'd you go, buddy?
I don't know what you're talking about. I've been smashing my oath since I returned to the podcast. if anything, I had 4 months to play 200 games and swear oaths that...
You sure you just didn't play a bunch of games and then just line them up? As oaths,
yeah. But I mean, from last time, one of the oaths I had was to play more of Burnt Cycle. We had just got it last week. Mitch, you and I were on again, and we kind of had fumbled through our first game. And I've played heaps of it since. I've played it, 5 or 6 full missions. I think I'm starting to have dreams about it now. It's like. There is so much thinking in this game. So I've played that a lot. I'm actually going to do a 180 here, and I'm going to say that this is probably the most complex game from Chip Theory Games.
Really?
I think the base rule set
is
a lot. There's a lot more there than Too Many Bones and Cloud Spire. It doesn't have as many... terms, like the abilities that every character has in Too Many Bones or all the fancy keywords that Cloudspire has, and you have to constantly look them up. It doesn't have that. There's like only 4 or 5 of these.
Mm.
But the core rules, there is a lot going on. So I'm very, very happy I've played more of Burn Cycle. That's done. There's definitely going to be more of that. The other oath, which has been massive, and I wasn't exactly confident that I would get it done, or should I say we would get it done, because it was to play a coin game with some members of the team, and I'm happy that Mitch, Connor, and myself had the opportunity to play our first coin game together, which was Andean Abyss, a few days ago, and that was an absolute blast. We probably should do a separate episode or a Patreon episode just talking about that experience. It was phenomenal. Yeah. So that was done. Now, a new oath. I didn't really know what to do next because I didn't want to swear an oath to play a new coin game. My brain has
needs a break.
started melting on the floor just by thinking of it. So instead, I'm just going to swear an oath to play the On Mars expansion, which is nice and quick. I just got it this week. I've played there's 4 missions. I've played the solo mission a couple of times. It's extremely difficult, but there's 4 missions. And so I'll swear an oath to play all of the different modes or modules or missions, whatever you want to call them, in the expansion game of On Mars. Adrian, I'm going to need your help with that. Because the first mission is needs at least 3 players, so we need to line that up. That's going to be my new oath, On Mars Alien Invasion.
There you go. Okay, well, we're on a roll so far. Total success. Based on that chuckle, Adrian's something as well. I'm going to go next so that when Adrian fails, it's a much more climactic.
Yeah.
So I had my oath was to play more Burn Cycle, and as Def just alluded to there, I have done that. I actually, from the last time I was on the podcast, I think I was I just started and I was partway through the tutorial. I'd literally only played a couple of turns, I think, at the time, working on the tutorial. And I actually then went from there and ditched the rest of the tutorial and just went headfirst in without the tutorial, which I didn't really have a problem with. It was still fine. I learned my way through it and was quite happy with how things went. I did end up losing on the third level. I didn't complete the third level successfully. So maybe for the strategy tips, it would have probably been better to stick around and go through the tutorial to see how they suggested that you play strategy wise. But nonetheless, I really enjoyed it. It's a fantastic game. I've actually put down, I'm doing a teach of Burn Cycle at the upcoming Sydney Game Day on Saturday. So I'm really looking forward to
fancy.
That. Yep, really looking forward to that. That'll be great to be able
Brad
to play
there
with.
Brad to teach it or?
Sorry? Is Brad going to teach it? Brad actually came down while I was playing it and he was like, oh, this looks awesome. And he sat down and watched me play a few turns. And he's like, this looks really good. And I said, yeah, it is great. Because he really likes that the whole stealth side of things as well.
Yeah,
he loves stealth
yeah.
games. So he was right into it. And I said, oh, cool. Do you want to? I said, you can just take over one of these characters and we can play a few turns if you want. He goes, no, I'm out. I'm gone.
Yeah.
And he jumped up and took off. So, but he seems keen enough. So hopefully we'll get him to play a game.
That's awesome.
Before too long.
Yeah, nice.
So that one was done. Tick that box. And my next oath is going to be when Sarah and I a couple of weeks ago went down to Good Games in Hurstville to their factory outlet, and one of the games that I picked up at the time was Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
I really want to try that.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a fan of Pandemic, as I think you guys might know. It's one of the first games that I played getting into the hobby. I think it's a classic co-op. Like it really sort of is the absolute epitome of co-op games. And, you know, how do you mix that up a little and make it a little bit more interesting? Well, stick a few Elder Gods in there and see how it goes.
Mm.
So I've got that one. I've been keen to have a crack at that for some time now. So that's going to be my next oath, that I'll swear to play Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu by the next time I'm on the pod.
There's awesome. there's just nothing that can't get mashed together these days, hey?
I can't. 18xx and artwork.
Ian O'Toole, yeah.
Yeah, you already said it's on. It's getting there. Like it's you know, it's baby steps. Yeah. But like, okay, Call of Duty. Let's just chuck in Godzilla and King Kong. Why not? Because that's what they've done. Like,
have they?
Yeah, that's it. They've just gone. Oh, you know what? Warzone could do a bit of a boost. Let's chuck King Kong in.
Yeah.
Go for it. You know, just mash it up.
Mash it up. Yeah. Have a throw Cthulhu in there.
Well, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Then I'd play it. So
yeah. Oh dear. So. Over to you then, Adrian. We're on a roll. We're 2 for 2. Can we get a clean sweep here? How did you go with your oath?
We're not getting a clean sweep. I'll let everyone know that right now. So I've got like so many oaths. It's ridiculous. So originally I swore to play 1862. And then when I spoke to Def off air, he's like, no, we're not doing that. That's crazy. And then we had to play 1860 first to learn. And then we learned 1862. So I'm ticking that off. That's overfilled for the old one. Technically.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's cool.
We'll give you that.
And then the alcohol stuff, whatever it's called, isopropyl alcohol or whatever the hell, I don't know. I didn't really read it. That's arrived to remove the paint from my Phoenix Mini, which I have unfortunately butchered and I don't really like it. So one of my O's was to remove the paint. So I haven't done that yet because I only just arrived. And since I played a 9-hour 18XX game or whatever on Saturday, it's basically taken up most of my weekend. That and Top Gun. So, yeah, I hope to get that done during this week and just get that paint off. But as far as O's go, we're also waiting for the On Mars expansion, but I'm going to play that with Def. So I'd like to play... I've said it already, but I'd like to play the Transcontinental
Oh, yes.
Really would like to play it more because I only played it like the once, one and a half. And I don't know if MJ is going to be able to play it with me this week. So I think I might attempt some solo gaming or I might try and see if anyone would like to play it online and or try and knock out a game online. So,
Well, there's probably, from the sounds of the talk that's been going on in our Discord channel about the effectiveness of the rule book,
yes,
there might be some people willing to take you up on being taught how to play the game.
Well, I don't know how the solo would work with the blind bidding thing. I'm guessing you just, I don't know how that works. You don't do it or what? So that would be quite interesting to read how that actually works as well. So, yeah, I'll have a look into it and see how it goes.
Okay. So that's us all done then. With the Oath segment wrapped up, that brings us to the end of the show. So I'd just like to say thank you to you two gentlemen for coming along on this journey with us today. It was a blast.
Thank you, Mitch. That was good fun.
No worries. And we will see you next time. And I hope all of your games between now and then are sizzling ones.
Cheers.
Thank you.
I thought you just recently got it on Kickstarter or something, Adrian.
That's not mine. It's Def's. Mine's Shikoku.
Oh, which is the one that you used to, you were banging on about that it was near your house and that and you knew the suburbs.
That's the one.
That's the one, but my home in the UK.
Yeah. Shikoku.
No, that's the Japanese one.
I was going to say, it sounds like a Japanese thing. Sound like... I'm just going to pop down to Leeds. I'm going to take a left to Shikoku and then...
on the JR rail to Shikoku and then off at Birmingham.
Yeah.
Well, hang on. If we just do a 1-2-3, so Mitch 1, me 2, Def 3, we'll be able to see if there's a bit of a lag.
Okay, 1.
2.
2. Oh, sorry. What was my... Right.
Whee! That's going in there, Dan. Done. He's got ya.
Okay. 1.
2.
I'm 2.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were confused.
No, I'm Adam.
Hey, let's play a game of the mind. We'll do really well.
Let's just play who can count to 3.